HR leaders, what's on your mind these days? Is it AI? Is it the economy? The talent market? Remote work? Retention? DEI? Pay transparency? New laws? Our 2024 Workplace Trends Report outlines how HR leaders are thinking about these challenges and what they believe will help their organizations overcome them. Want to find out what they said? Head on over to peoplemanagingpeople.com/workplacetrends2024 and download the report to find out.
Conflict. Do we avoid it? Do we embrace it? If you manage people, there will be conflict unless you have created an organization of robot people. Some companies rely heavily on HR to navigate a conflict, but what do you do if you don't have an HR person or a team? Then what? Conflict is unavoidable. However, the way we respond to conflict doesn't have to be reactionary, always ready for a fight, or with anger. Healthy conflict is important as you grow your business, and how you respond to it is even more important. In this podcast, my guest will walk us through why embracing conflict is, well, not always the easiest. However, it doesn't have to be difficult.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm Tim Reitzma, the resident host of People Managing People. Welcome to the podcast. We're people managing people, and we want to lead and manage better. We're owners, founders, entrepreneurs. We're middle managers. We're team leaders. We're managing people, and yes, we do human resources. But we're not HR, at least not in the traditional sense. We're on a mission to help people lead and manage their teams and organizations more effectively. So if you want to lead and manage better, if you want to become a better organizational leader and more effective people manager, then join us. Keep listening to the podcast to find the tips, tricks, and tools you need to recruit, retain, manage, and lead your people and organization more effectively. And while listening to the show, please subscribe and join our mailing list on peoplemanagingpeople.com to stay up to date with all that's going on.
At the end of this episode, you will have a simple framework on how to navigate and become more comfortable with conflict. My guest today is an expert in conflict, not because she looks for it wherever she goes, but because she has worked with many organizations on how to work through conflict, navigate, and embrace it. Whether you have an HR team or not, Tanya Schechter is someone you need to listen to. With over 20 years as a leadership coach and consultant, she brings a heart-centered approach that fosters collaboration and connection to achieve growth, change, transformation through authentic leadership. She is the co-founder of the HTI Institute, a Vancouver, BC-based consulting company focused on revolutionizing your relationships and helping you lead from your heart. So welcome, Tanya.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. I was thinking right off the beginning, like, how could we get into a big conflict just for our listeners? But before we get into some big conflict or debate, I'd love to hear a bit more about who you are. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself?
Sure. Thanks for asking. My background is, as you mentioned, as a leadership and coach, and I have been working with organizations for over 20 years, really to help deal through conflict and change. As we all know, change is part of every organization, and organizations need to successfully move through change in order to move forward, evolve, and grow. And throughout all of these processes, and even just throughout the normal interactions of work, there's often that conflict comes up because we're humans. And unless we all saw everything exactly the same, in which case we probably wouldn't grow and evolve, conflict is a natural tendency that will happen at different points. Sometimes it's conflict over a process, and sometimes there's personality conflict. And all of that has to be dealt with and managed inside of an organization. And that's my passion.
Okay. Well, thanks for that. So your passion is really to help people and organizations, and you'd mentioned kind of navigate through maybe some hard things in order to grow as an individual and an organization. And you mentioned conflict. We're talking about conflict today. And for those who are listening, I'm sure you can quickly close your eyes and think back to a latest conflict, either in your personal life or in your workplace, and think, man, did I handle that correctly, or could I have handled it better? But just for the sake of this podcast, what is conflict? Is it just a simple disagreement between two people or more, or is it something more than that?
I think conflict can be a variety of things. It can be any time that there's a rub between two people. People see things differently. And the conflict comes when people start feeling like there has to be agreement. It has to be one way or the other. It's black or white. And as soon as it starts coming into a position where people have to take sides, that's where it turns conflictual.
The picking of sides. Do you have an example that you can share? Maybe leave out people's names or company names, but where this, the picking of sides or where a big conflict has come up?
Sure. Sometimes working in organizations, we see this a lot on teams, and it can start to happen around process. One person feels like the process should look a specific way, and somebody else believes it should be something else. And it can quickly emerge as a either or position instead of using the conflict as a way to explore and open up more possibilities so that a third way can emerge.
Yeah. And it's often I've come across organizations where there's an absence of conflict, and yet we say conflict is pretty much unavoidable. So what would be a cause of absence of conflict?
So typically when what we've noticed is when there's an absence of conflict, it's either that everybody is so in tune with each other and working in complete alignment with their values and their company's values, and they have each person has such high levels of interpersonal skills that there's never any disagreement that gets elevated to the level of conflict because it all just gets worked through as an opportunity for growth, and that's extremely rare. Typically, the reason why we see conflict happen is because people have an inability to start engaging in conversation to see where the commonalities lie. And as the conflicts or the conversations get avoided, there's typically, it gets swept under the rug, but the feelings behind it and the opinions and the thoughts behind it don't disappear, and it starts to create an environment of toxicity.
Yeah, I like how you brought that up, the environment of just a toxic environment, or can lead to a toxic environment. I just think of even myself, if I bottle things up instead of addressing things, it has an effect on us as humans. And I can imagine even in small or large organizations, how that can have a massive effect.
Totally. I mean, you can think about how that translates into the day-to-day environment. Even if I think about myself, when I'm not dealing with something, it comes out in other ways, right? And that's where you can start to see passive aggressiveness, people being clipped or short. There's not real dialogue that starts happening. There starts to be a bad or toxic feeling in the environment, something heavy and poisonous. And that's where the feelings and the weight of the environment start coming down. And that's where it often leads to a lot of disability. If it goes to an extreme, we can start seeing disability claims, mental health claims, people get physically sick, and it just translates into a cascade.
Yeah, it does. I was doing some research ahead of this recording, and there's so much data to support avoiding conflict does lead to, if you're a business owner or a leader, whoever you are listening, it leads to increased cost somewhere else in your business, not just as well as now you've got a grudge or a bad relationship with somebody on your team. And I came across this quote from Patrick Lencioni, and I think it's very fitting for this part of the conversation. It says, "Failing to engage in conflict is a terrible decision, one that puts our temporary comfort and the avoidance of discomfort ahead of the ultimate goal of our organization. Conflict is always the right thing to do when it matters." So I'm going to put you on the spot there. What are your thoughts on that?
I love it because it's absolutely in line with something that I say all the time, which is you can either be uncomfortable for a really short period of time and deal with the actual conflict, or you can get more and more uncomfortable for a longer period of time. And there's more and more of an impact in that case, right?
Yeah, I love that. Just the being in the uncomfortable for a short amount of time. And let me ask you something a little personal then. Are you someone who avoids conflict or hits it head on?
I would say that I'm more of somebody who approaches conflict because I personally feel it so much in my body that if there's any kind of what I call static, I can't relax. So I actually have found that I have to deal with things. It just takes too much of a physical toll on me. And it's interesting because my business partner, Matthew, who you've interviewed before, he's on the opposite side of the spectrum. We always joke that he's a recovering conflict avoider. And when I met him, he was kind of like conflict, ooh, you know, poof, like the roadrunner, and you'd see the little cloud of dust behind him, right? And for him growing up, it was really a matter of almost anything, even as small as a difference of opinion could send him into a tailspin and have him avoid it. And he realized that over his lifetime, he's probably missed the opportunity to have thousands of conversations.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Just a conflict avoider. I wonder if that's like something that you can put on your LinkedIn, or I could put that on my LinkedIn as a skill or a trait or something. I think there's a lot of us out there that don't necessarily enjoy conflict to the point where it seems easier just to let things go than to actually hit it head on. But it's important. We need to be addressing it. Is there a right time or right place to be getting into a conflict, or if there's a conflict going on, to address that conflict?
I think there's definitely certain conditions that allow the conflict to be managed more successfully than others. Obviously, if you know you're in a state of complete reactivity, that's the wrong time to deal with the conflict. If you know you're physically high, like you're on high alert, you're feeling like, oh, I have to defend myself, it's not going to go anywhere. And so there's a piece where if we can calm ourselves down physically and get to the point where we're out of the reactivity and able to stand back and observe and question our own reactions and then start to get curious about the other person, it's a much better place to start addressing the conflict because it just becomes less aggressive.
Hey, you mentioned two things in that is how to remain calm as well as getting curious. And so for me, I think of a conflict, you know, in the workplace from previous place and I wasn't calm and I wasn't curious. And so I think that's kind of a go-to, right? It's that fight or flight feeling that we get where, okay, I feel like I'm being maybe attacked or I'm taking something really personal. How do we remain calm? Do you have a technique that you can share or something that that our listeners can take away or practice?
Sure. There's two pieces actually that come to mind. So in our HTI relationship map, we've got two tools. One is a navigational tool that we call Sticky. And it's really the process of stop, think, choose, and implement. So if we find ourselves getting hyperreactive and feeling like, okay, it's time to fight, I've got to defend myself at all costs, right? That's the time at which it's time to just stop. Stop talking, stop saying, stop acting, stop whatever we were doing, and just try and calm ourselves down. And that's where the time of doing things like deep belly breathing, really to bring our nervous system down and get to a place where we can actually observe not just the other person, but ourselves, and observe our thoughts. And that's where we can start thinking and make more of a conscious choice about how we're going to respond. So it's basically giving us that chance between the stimulus and response. And I always like to say that between stimulus and response, there's the pause. And that's really what makes us human. And we can control to elongate that pause or not. And by taking the steps to elongate that pause before responding, we're much more able to respond with intention in a proactive way that will net us the outcomes that we want. And sometimes it may just be, you know what, I'm too hot, I can't respond, I'm too overloaded, and I'm going to come back, right? And letting the person in front of us know that we're too triggered and that we really want to have the conversation, but we don't want to have it from this reactive place. And then we can go and think about all of our different options and play between, well, which one should we choose? And then we can finally make our choice, and we can do it with the person in front of us or on our own and then come have the conversation.
I like that. It sounds so simple. Stop, think, choose, and implement. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's the word or the phrase emotional intelligence comes up in that, because being able to recognize that, okay, I'm feeling my blood pressure go up, I'm feeling more agitated, I feel like, you know, my fists are clenched because I'm getting angry. But taking a minute and just stopping in that moment, and in some cases, even looking at the person, like you said, across from us and saying, look, I'm really triggered right now. I just need a couple of minutes, or I'll come back to this in a X amount of time. And so is that common? Do people in your experience take that pause?
No, I think it's something that's learned, and people who have an awareness and start practicing it, play with it. And most of us tend to go to our default fight or flight, right? So that's where it's a practice to learn to elongate that pause and really consciously pick that option over something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's really important to practice that and to learn that. And you know, I'm a father of two small children, and so I think that has helped me practice this. Okay, I need a couple minutes before I deal with this, or before I react in a way I don't want to react. And so it's super awkward at first, in mm-hmm. my opinion. However, you know, clearing your head, clearing your mind, and understanding, you know, the intention. I think, you know, often you mentioned, like, where conflict comes from is where two or more people are fighting for something that they believe is right, you know, or someone has an opinion that is different than the opinion that you or I might have. And so a conflict might occur. And that's where getting curious really comes into play.
Totally. What I love about what you said about that is it really brings to mind that often what people are fighting over isn't actually the content, it becomes the values that are underneath it. And so this morning I had a conversation with a client that I've been working with, and she was saying how her business partner, he's the creative director and the manager and the one, you know, responsible for building the business. And she's like, he's the marketing and she's the creative director, right? And so for him, he's all excited because they're getting all these business meetings and all these leads, and it looks like the clients are coming in head over heels. And she's starting to feel overwhelmed. And so when we started talking, it was like, well, it's actually a values conflict, because coming from the marketing background, for him, success looks like dollars coming in, revenue, clients, being number one. Whereas for her, success looks like being in charge of creative, doing high quality work, being known for creativity, which isn't necessarily the same. So they both are operating from the same values, but the values mean different things to them.
I love that you brought that up. And that's, that's could be its own conversation, just on, you know, we share the same words, but yet we hold different definitions for those words. And I like how you brought that up in terms of success, right? For one person, it means lots of money in the bank. For the other person, it doesn't necessarily mean that. It means you being really great at a given craft and skill. So, you know, therein lies conflict. And I'm curious, I don't know if you're able to share or not, but, you know, how are these two people then navigating it? Do they bring in a mediator to help create a definition? Are they being coached through it? Is it, you know, gloves off, get in the ring and battle it out?
Well, I think for them, it was just like, this was an off the cuff conversation, because I'd done some work with them around values earlier and how values determine a lot of what we do and how we, and so I think that it hadn't clicked that actually what they were having was a values conflict as and what underlie each value. And so my guess is that now they're going to go back and have that conversation from that perspective, as opposed to, well, what outcome should we be going for?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love that, because it sounds like a smaller company, maybe just two people mm-hmm. in this agency, and being able to sit down and have that conversation and have a healthy conflict to come to a positive resolution. Now, let's switch gears for a second. So I've worked in many large organizations where if a conflict arises, HR is brought in It seems to almost be the default, and HR is then acts as that mediator and someone to can hear both sides and whatnot. And so when you have an HR person or a team, is it their responsibility to be brought in on all conflict?
No, I would say ideally that's not the HR person's job or role. And I would say that in companies where people don't have the skill sets or don't know how to engage in having these types of conversations, that it escalates to the point where a third party needs to be there to facilitate the conversation.
Sometimes, yes, getting a third party who's, you know, not your best friend or a buddy in the company to be the mediator is the right thing to do. And so, you know, when you do have a small company, because a lot of our listeners are those business owners potentially who have founded a company and wear multiple hats. They are the CEO, the COO, the HR team, the finance team, the you name it in the organization. And so, you know, is there a simple tool or framework that if somebody's listening to this that they can take away today and practice?
Sure. I think that there's a few that I can think of. One is really understanding, especially in a small company, if you can understand each other's core values, right? Because they seem to often inform how we show up even at work. So to give you an example, you know, one time we were working with a group and one person said that their core value was time, right? Being in integrity with their time and being on time. So if a meeting would go over, they would leave because they wanted to be sure to be prompt for their next meeting and make the commitment that they were at next. Somebody else who was on the same team, their value was always giving your all. And so they could have perceived the person who was leaving as not giving their all. But once they understood that they were acting in line with their value, right, of keeping time and being in integrity with it and holding their commitments, it changed the perspective. And so then they could start having a conversation around, okay, well, if knowing that you really feel the need to hold time and these meetings may go on longer, what can we do to support you, right? So that you can stay in the meeting and still be in integrity, or how can I keep the meeting shorter and carry it over as needed? Mm. Right. So just even knowing each other's values and how they inform our decision-making can start and allow us to have these conversations around functional issues that come up and that can create conflict or rubs.
I like that. It actually just brought up a scenario in my mind of a recent job that I was doing where, you know, one of my core values is curiosity. And so when I was bouncing around some ideas, I was just getting a person's opinion, just getting the thought. And so no curiosity at all. It was just yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. Right. And it completely rubbed me the wrong way. So now it's, I'm analyzing my previous career. And often that's where conflict does come from is it's, we have to assume good intentions. People aren't, you know, in our organizations with malicious intent. So if we assume good intentions, then we need to not just assume everyone is like you or like me. Mm-hmm. We need to get curious. We need to understand what makes us all, you know, tick, what makes us all breathe. So it's one big takeaway is understand core values. And so if you're sitting down, let's say you've got a small team of four or five people, you think, I don't have the luxury of a day to figure out core values of individuals. Is there a quick and easy way to at least uncover one or two core values in a short amount of time?
I think that you can have each person write them down and then you can do a quick share. You can always ask somebody, so I've noticed this and I'm wondering what value you're representing when you do this. Right. And it gives you a chance to have an exploratory conversation as things progress, as opposed to having to sit down and have a specific discussion about values.
Yeah, I like that. Is, you know, we all have values, whether we've defined them or not. And so it's getting clear on our own values. And you know, for the nature of this podcast, we don't have the time to go into it. But, you know, we will have a follow-up. I will have a follow-up podcast just on core values, because I think it's an essential piece piece of the foundation of not just an individual, but an organization. And
absolutely.
So I think it's hugely important. Understand. So a big takeaway is we have to assume that there's no, ill intent. And we also, we're not all the same. We're all different. We need to get curious and understand what makes each other function and tick and what we're all passionate about. Now, I want to just switch gears a little bit to your website, htiinstitute.com. And you've got a resource there called the Conflict-O-Meter.
Right.
And so I love the name, and I wish I could show up a visual of it, of all the emojis on it. And so tell me about this. Tell me about this tool. What prompted the creation of it? For those who are listening, on the left-hand side, it's red and it says run. And on the right-hand side, it says, this is an awesome opportunity. And so what does it mean?
So Matt and I were developing a course on conversation and conflict, or conflict and conversation. And we were talking about how people generally, it's that fight or flight response, right? And that very few people instinctively go to, this is going to be a great opportunity, great conversation. It's, and that collaborative process. And so we thought that we would use the Conflict-O-Meter. Can be used in several ways. One would be to first use it. And by the way, this is a downloadable resource that anybody can download and use. So one way would be to just look at it and see, where's my natural tendency, and to rate yourself, right? And so if you know that your natural tendency is run, well, then you also can figure out that, if I want to get to more of a place where a conflict is a potential opportunity, then why is it that I feel that it's run? Like, what's threatening about it? Is it that I don't have the skills or the tools? Is it my perception of conflict? Which area do I want to work on? And then do some work around it. And then once we've gotten some tools in our toolbox, we can then go back and rate ourselves. Are we still in the same place in terms of just generic approach to conflict? Another way of using it, though, would be, let's say I know I have to have a conversation. And so in my head, I'm like, this is going to be a difficult conversation. It's going to be heavy. I'm uncomfortable. I can rate myself and see, where am I? Am I at the point of I want to run? Am I just worried? Or can I handle it? I'm not looking forward to it, but I'm ready. Or am I totally engaged and ready for this? And I can't wait to start, having this discussion, because I can't wait to find out what it's going to open up. And if we're anywhere on the left-hand side, then it's a time to not engage in the direct conflict and to start thinking about, well, what strategies do I need to get in place? What do I want to look at? How do I want to approach the conversation? And really put some framework in place for ourselves and put some tools in our toolkit so that we're feeling really comfortable to pull out and use in the conversation. And once we've got all that in place, then we can go back and see if we've changed where we are on the Conflict-O-Meter. Do we feel more prepared?
I like that. I like the idea of just, you talked about earlier, just about the stop and think. And this is a great tool just to even assist in that is, yeah, how am I feeling? I'm worried, or this should be okay. Or nope, I got to run. I got to completely avoid this. And so often we just choose to run from that conflict. And, I was pulling up some stats about conflict and trying to dig out, how much does it potentially cost us in the workplace? How often do we spend in conflict? And, I found a stat, I believe it was, the average person, and I'm going to butcher this, but it was a study done and by the publishers of the Myers-Briggs assessment. In U.S., employees spend 2.1 hours per week involved in conflict, which amounts to approximately $359 billion in paid hours. Mm-hmm. So a lot of time is spent on conflict. And sure, again, conflict isn't bad. It can actually help us drive our businesses forward. But if we think of it in the negative sense, in conflict that is just, you know, not producing results, it can cost our businesses.
Absolutely. And I would say that it's the unresolved conflict and the conflict that's not being productive or going anywhere that has a cost. It has a cost for us physically, emotionally. There's lost productivity for the organizations. And I know for myself, if I'm super upset, it comes home and mm-hmm. it cascades out, right? I'll talk to my husband. It sucks up his time. It could, you know, leech over and bleed into him. He can start feeling aggravated. So it has a whole cascading effect as well. That's often hidden.
Yeah, definitely. And if we hide that conflict, it has an effect on us and it leads to an erosion of trust in our organizations. So I think there's a whole big play on, you know, why don't we engage in conflict? And often, at least I believe it stems from, okay, we don't know each other, but maybe I don't trust you. Maybe I don't mm-hmm. trust someone. And do you agree or disagree with that?
Totally. I think there's that assumption that the other person can't handle it, right? I think that there's a bunch of things that one, it's, you know, if we approach them, we might hurt their feelings, or we might have the conversation and it'll be a waste of time because it won't go anywhere, or the situation will get worse, or they can't handle it, or we don't have the tools and skills that we feel that we need to know how to handle it. So it can be a bunch of things, and not dealing with conflict creates an erosion in trust. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I've adopted just a little saying as I've, over the last couple of years, as I was like you said, Matt, just a roadrunner, just avoiding conflict, yeah. a conflict avoider, and it really adopted a phrase of, you know, I can control my words, but I can't necessarily control the outcome or control the reaction to those words. Meaning, if I'm going to approach something and just be a bully, yeah, I'm looking, I pretty much know the reaction I'm going to get. But as we are in the workplaces and working with others, we need to stop and think about the words we're going to use, the actions we're going to take before we handle something. And, you know, I think of working in different teams and I've implemented a number of big systems over the years, and conflict is good. I've had a lot of conflict. It's brought out better results in design of systems and the implementation of them. Knowing that it's not personal and knowing that we've got the trust of our people, and we trust each other. And at the end of the day, you know, we can still go grab a beer, go for coffee with each other and not take it personal. So.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's really interesting hearing you say that. I think you said something really important about being in control of what we say and not being attached to the outcome. Like, we really can't control the outcome. And what we can also influence is how we say it, knowing who the receiver is. So we can also know, you know, what we know about the person who we're going to be talking to or managing the conflict with. We need to take that into account about how we deliver our message. So, I mean, for example, I'm a very direct person, and I know for some people it's too much. So if I'm in great relationship with somebody who I know I can say anything to, I don't have to censor myself as much. And for other people, it's kind of, I use this mental imagery of, you know, a little bunny rabbit laying cotton balls of fluff, you know, to soften what I'm going to say, because yeah. I know for some people that's really needed in to tone myself down for them to be able to hear what I'm saying.
I love that you brought that up and that's a key takeaway as well, is again, we're everybody in our teams, whether we're a team of two, an organization of two, or an organization of hundreds or thousands, we're all different. And we all react differently, and we all take feedback very differently and react in such different ways. Yeah, you'd mentioned you're a direct person. You know, I'm not necessarily as direct. And so knowing that, if we ever work together, I would like to know that, right? So we can, if there's a conflict, then I know not to take it personal, then I know that, okay, this is how Tanya reacts or Tanya talks. And it helps build our relationship.
Absolutely. And it's almost like conflict is a practice. It's not a one-stop shop, right? So every conflict that we engage in, we learn something about ourselves, about the process of managing conflict, about the tools that we have at our disposal, how well we wield them, and about the other person that we're in conflict with.
Mm-hmm. So is that a takeaway for the listeners, is to get to the office or at home and just instigate a conflict, just to practice, right? I think we need practice of it. And I say that, you know, jokingly, because, you know, we don't necessarily want to go and look for conflict, but with the model of stop, think, choose, and then implement, as well as head to the hdiinstitute.com and look for the conflictometer. It's a great little simple resource to use. And so, yeah, I'm curious, any last thoughts, or any, as we wrap up the podcast, any final thoughts on conflict and how not to avoid it, and how and why we should be embracing it?
I think it's just the idea that conflict is just an opportunity to have a conversation. And if we can embrace conflict as an opportunity, possibilities open up, and possibilities both for outcomes and for our relationship.
Oh, I like that. It's used as an opportunities for, you know, to learn and to grow and to gain different perspectives. And yeah, that's great, Tanya. And so I really thank you for taking your time today to talk to us about all things conflict and provide just a really simple, straightforward framework for the listeners to really take home or take to the office and put into practice today. So with that, I want to thank you. And I also want to just thank our listeners for tuning in today. And if you like what you heard or have any other ideas or thoughts for podcasts, please head to peoplemanagingpeople.com, as well as subscribe to our newsletter. We will have links to reach out to Tanya, as well as her company and the resource, in the comment section of the podcast below. So with that, I'd like to thank you, Tanya, and have a great day, everyone.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. It's been awesome.